You're listening to a podcast from Trinity Church Buxton. For more information, please visit our website at trinitybuxton.org.uk.
You'll be able to follow the reading there, but you might also want to have your eyes kind of looking this way too, as we're going to have a dramatised version of our Bible reading. So, those taking part, come take your places, and over to you. Thanks very much.
It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him, because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said,
"We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God."
So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said,
"O King Darius, live forever."
The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den.
Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed.
So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree.
"Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man, except to you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den?"
The king answered,
"The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed."
Then they said to the king,
"Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day."
When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him,
"Remember, O king, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues, that's you, can be changed."
So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel,
"May your God, whom you serve continually, may he rescue you."
A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating, without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice.
Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, has he been able to rescue you from the lions?
Daniel answered,
"O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king."
The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den, And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land.
May you greatly prosper. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed, his dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions.
So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian.
Wow, now that is a dramatic story, isn't it? Children, if you want to bring your handout kind of sheets down to the front, you can do. There's pens and stuff down here, or if you want to come and help yourself to pens during the talk, that's absolutely fine. Make yourselves at home. But that is dramatic, isn't it? What a dramatic story. We've been looking through Daniel in our morning services, as I was saying earlier. And if you were here last week, you'll know that Belshazzar, who succeeded Nebuchadnezzar, he failed to acknowledge that God reigns. Gents, if we just have it on the screen, thanks. He failed to acknowledge that God was in charge, and so he was killed. And who took over? Well, it was King Darius, who we've just met. And as we look at this passage this morning, we're going to be thinking and considering the danger of denying that God reigns, the danger of saying that God isn't in control, the danger of trying to build a kingdom for yourself rather than living for God. And that is an appropriate thing to be remembering and thinking about on Remembrance Sunday. Because so many of the wars which have been fought or fought against are trying to protect people from other people's greed, from them trying to build an even greater kingdom for themselves. Whether that's fighting against Nazi occupation and aggression during the Second World War, or standing against other horrendous regimes, of which there's just too many to mention. Many have given their lives during both world wars and in conflict since to help protect against the greed of man and to enable us to live peaceful and quiet lives so that we're able to enjoy the freedoms which we have today. And it's also worth saying that during conflicts, or as we look back over past conflicts, it would be easy to say that the world is out of control. Look at all the mess, the relentless killings, the death, the disease, the abuse. Yet if there's one really clear thing that we learn from the book of Daniel, it's that often, despite appearances and against all the odds, the God of heaven is in control and is reigning. He's in charge through his son. And that nothing, not even world wars, can stop his plans. God reigns, God's in charge. And so there's great danger in ignoring or fighting against that fact. So, back to Daniel. What was Darius going to do as he took over this foreign land of Babylon? He couldn't do it all himself. So did you notice he appointed 120 satraps, which is basically a Persian name for local governors, and three administrators over them. Sounds like a good plan. And one of those administrators was Daniel. So Darius had obviously done his Babylonian homework and seen how Daniel had been useful over the years. Then look in verse 3. It says this: "Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom." Daniel was doing such a good job that the king wanted to set him up over the whole kingdom. And we see clearly through the book of Daniel that Daniel keeps on acknowledging that God reigns, that God's in charge. He's very quick at every opportunity to give God the glory. But not everyone was happy with how Daniel was getting on, were they? There was jealousy. And instead of wanting to support Darius, the other administrators and satraps, they wanted to build their own kingdom and take down Daniel in the process. And just like we've thought, that's often how conflict starts, isn't it? Wanting to build a kingdom for yourself rather than acknowledging that God reigns. But then look at verses 4 and 5. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We'll never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So, the administrators went to the king and tricked him into making a law that everyone must pray to him alone over the next 30 days, or they'll be thrown to the lion's den. So, Daniel shrinks back, he hides away, and he just gets on with his job, and he kind of takes a 30-day sabbatical from being a follower of God. That's what we might have been tempted to do, isn't it? But no, look what Daniel does. Did you notice in verse 10? When Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem, and three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. That's amazing, isn't it? Daniel carries on regardless. In fact, he's completely open and transparent about it. He's not going to hide the fact that he continues to pray. The windows are open. And not just once a day, he does it three times. Now, just pause for a moment here, okay? Because Daniel wasn't naive about what was going on. He knew that to pray would mean he was going to be arrested and thrown to the lion's den. He wouldn't have been unaware that there were many people around him who didn't want him to get on well. He was oppressed on every side, yet he bent his knees in prayer. Does that remind you of anyone? How about our Lord Jesus Christ, who on the night that he was betrayed would be found where? On his knees, facing death in the Garden of Gethsemane. I love the parallels that can be found in the Bible. Now, unsurprisingly, Daniel is caught, isn't he? And then we see a great example of pester power as the satraps and the administrators work hard to remind the king of the law that he has passed, that Daniel must be thrown to the lion's den. So verse 15, then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, "Remember, O king, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." Remember. The king was trapped. He valued Daniel, but he'd been well and truly stitched up. He wasn't comfortable with the situation, and he tried everything to rescue him. We see that in verse 14. But Daniel had to be thrown to the lion's den. It looked as if defeat was inevitable, didn't it? It looked like Daniel was certainly going to be killed. The king ordered that Daniel be thrown to the lions in verse 16, but he wasn't happy about it. That night, he eats nothing, he has no entertainment, he doesn't watch the X Factor, and he gets no sleep. And while the king mourned, his enemies celebrated. Yet what do we see? Well, we see one of the great reversals in the Bible. Daniel, who faced certain death, was he gobbled up by the lions? No, he wasn't, was he? The king was desperate to know. Look down to verse 19. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They've not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king." Daniel is rescued. Was Daniel rescued by his mighty strength? No, he wasn't. How was he rescued? Anyone spot it? Go on, Dorian. By praying to Jesus, that's a really great answer. I'm sure, we know that God was involved. That's a great answer. Who was it who shut the lion's mouths? Can you find it? Go on, Esther. Yeah, God by his angels. He sent angels to shut the lion's mouth so that he wasn't gobbled up. And Daniel is quick again to acknowledge that it's God who's in control of all things. It's God who sent the angel to keep the mouth of the lion shut. What a rescue. What a surprise. We don't expect that to happen when people are thrown to the lions. Daniel, who acknowledged that God reigns, was rescued. In a way, it was like he was brought back to life. It's a great reversal. Just like the great reversal of the cross that we read about in the New Testament. Jesus, who faced death and was crucified at Golgotha, he wasn't defeated by the grave, was he? After 3 days, he rose again. Death couldn't hold Jesus because he's Lord. Daniel was rescued as he acknowledged that God reigns. But remember, we're thinking this morning about the danger of not acknowledging that God reigns. Because the great reversal takes another turn here, doesn't it? As the satraps and the administrators, who just the night before thought that they'd beaten Daniel, are themselves thrown to the lions the very next day, and are overpowered and killed even before they hit the floor of the lion's den. It's in verse 24. Friends, there is great danger in ignoring that God reigns. But just as there is great danger, there's also great hope. God is a God who loves to show mercy. And through the cross, where we see the greatest reversal, we see how there is forgiveness for how we reject God and how we can be given new life, new hope. We too can be rescued from the grave, just like Daniel was. And Darius himself began to understand this, didn't he? As he acknowledges for himself that God reigns in the final verses of this chapter. So look at verse 25. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations and men of every language throughout the land, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." Things were a mess for Daniel in Babylon, and not for the first time either. Remember, he wasn't living in his homeland. He was an exile. He was living away from home. Yet despite the mess of the situation he was in, Daniel acknowledged that God reigns. And Remembrance Day reminds us of the mess that this world is in and the sacrifice of so many to allow us to live in relative freedom. Remembrance Day, as well as remembering the sacrifice of men and women across both world wars and since, is a big signpost that actually, despite the mess of this world, that God is in control. We mustn't be like the satraps and the administrators in Daniel 6. Rather, we should acknowledge that God is in control and that he is in the process of righting all the wrongs, and that he does this through his son Jesus, who died on the cross to pay the penalty for our sin. We should remember his sacrifice, that he died even for his enemies to enable us to have our relationship with God restored. Remember and acknowledge that God reigns just as Daniel did, even in the face of extreme difficulties. And remember too, there are great consequences of acknowledging God reigns and very serious consequences for not doing this, as the satraps and the administrators found out, and as Darius learnt and changed his ways.